Welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. I'm your host, Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on X, the Everything app, at jwright929. As always, you can listen to us on the radio dial, 92.9 FM, 680 AM. But if you're away from the radio and you want to keep listening, you can do so over on the Odyssey app, free to download, free to listen. You can also stream us on iHeartRadio, TuneIn Radio. You can also check out the live streams over on YouTube, Twitch, and X, the Everything app. It is all happening on X. George Ruggiero is, of course, the producer of the program. You can follow him on the Everything app at KingGeorge94. George, good day, sir.
Good afternoon, Jeffrey. Quick shout out from me. Former Memphis Tiger Xavier Hill, who transferred over to Colorado. It is their pro day today.
All right.
And his parents, because he went to Olive Branch High School, so they're in the area, come and play trivia with me down at Dan McGinnis on Thursday. So they said, hey, we had to let you know what's going on with our boy. So quick shout out to him. Good luck with your pro day today.
Best of luck at pro day. My company is each and every Tuesday on the program. He is the host of VSiN's College Football, College Basketball Betting Podcast. Check out his Saturday show live streaming on VSiN as well as select television providers. You can always hear him on VSiN Primetime, airing on weeknights. He's on the Everything app at one Tim Murray. Tim, good day, sir.
Hello, hello. How we doing?
Oh, I'm doing great, my man. I was thinking as we were watching basketball this weekend that it's something that we've kind of, I don't know if maybe you and I have talked about it, but I know I talked about it with DeMichael on Friday, where I think forever this tournament was defined by guard play. Whether or not it was true or not, certainly guards are the players that win the NCAA tournament. Would you say that was at least the fair narrative?
I think so. For, you know, once upon a time it was bigs, but yes, it is certainly, it had been, and I think I know where you're headed.
Are the bigs back, baby?
Bigs are back. It's a good day to be the big fellas.
Revenge of the big.
I'll tell you what, it was funny. I was watching CBS Sports Network. Like Roy Hibbert and Emeka Okafor.
Legends.
On the set, and they were pumped. I don't know if I think it was Sunday night's show. They were pumped with the return of the bigs or sometime over the weekend.
So I've looked at some numbers. I actually came in, did a decent amount of research. Whether or not, you know, sometimes I like to put numbers to it and see whether or not it's actually true. I think we're going to figure out it might indeed be true. Also wanted to take a look over at VSiN's March Mania, so the trends that we saw from Elite Eight and Sweet 16 weekend, whether or not those actually held true, whether or not we should actually even be paying attention to trends. So want to discuss that with you.
The only trend you need to know is just bet on Danny Hurley.
Bet on Danny Hurley, and I mean, I would say first half one seeds. Although I guess maybe Illinois would not have gotten home.
Well, they weren't a one seed though.
No, I'm sorry. I was the one seeds would have all covered first half numbers.
Correct.
Yeah, and the only one that didn't was Duke.
Poor Duke.
Poor Duke. Actually, I wanted to discuss something about that as well.
I heard an interesting topic I want to add to as well regarding the Duke Blue Devils. I heard a podcast talking about Duke, and we'll save it maybe for a little bit later, but there is something unifying about Duke losing.
Oh, I mean, it's there. We talked about it yesterday. Like, who are the teams that when they lose, everyone is happy except for that fan base?
Yankees. I think maybe the Dodgers now.
So it's weird we're talking about it. I still don't feel like the Dodgers have gotten to the empire. To the Yankee, even though they are they are using the rules to their advantage. They have an unfair playing field. Like everything is, but it doesn't feel like they draw out the like just sheer anger of everyone else. And maybe it's Shohei is likable.
Well, maybe is it a baseball thing too?
So my working theory was it's less about success. It's more about exposure. Because I think the same thing kind of holds true to the Cowboys. the Cowboys have not really been relevant at the highest level in 30-plus years.
Correct.
But when the Cowboys lose, it is a very high approval rating amongst Americans.
Yeah, I feel like Notre Dame and the Cowboys are similar, that neither have gotten to the mountaintop since, you know.
Notre Dame has been more relevant at the highest end than the...
I would agree.
Notre Dame has twice in what, the last 15 years played for the national title?
Yep. 2012 and 2 years ago.
And I believe the Cowboys have not gotten to an NFC championship game since their last Super Bowl.
That is correct.
So Notre Dame is much more relevant at the peak level. Like, they've not won the overall championship, but they're much more relevant. I think it's the same thing with the Yankees. It's the fact that when you turn on ESPN and they act like nothing else exists in the sport. But there's also this weird issue of, like, if I were submitting the college football team, I would say it's Alabama. Despite Alabama not operating at peak of its powers, America loves to watch them get beat and get beat in, like, hilarious fashion.
Now, I am obviously a Notre Dame fan, so I'm maybe a bit blinded by the hatred that is out there. But I do think Marcus Freeman has helped.
No question.
The hatred. Brian Kelly leaving in the fashion that he did for LSU really helped.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I mean, I feel like they've felt... They're not as, maybe because they don't have a partnership with ESPN, they're not as in-your-face as SEC teams are, to your point. So I do think, if I had to guess, the overall hatred for Notre Dame is probably lower than it's been in recent years, because, you know, ESPN's going to talk about Notre Dame, and certainly this past year with the Miami situation, it was kind of nauseating. But it doesn't feel like, and maybe I'm wrong.
But who made that conversation?
ESPN.
Nothing further, Your Honor.
True. So there you go. Maybe I am blinded. But yeah, I think...
No. I'm supporting your point. I think also the fact that Notre Dame's partnered with NBC, like, even Fox is not out there, you know, propping them up.
Right. Like, they're on every once in a while, and when Notre Dame plays a big game on the road, you know, they'll be prominent. You know, last year they started the season on Labor Day Sunday with a game at Miami. When they play BYU this year, I would imagine that's going to be a big primetime game. But for ESPN, they're in bed with the biggest behemoth there is in football. That is SEC. And to your point about Fox, they're in bed with the Big Ten. So... yeah, it does feel like Notre Dame isn't as in your face as they were. Duke, on the other side, obviously is. I mean, they're the biggest brand in college basketball. Coach K goes on McAfee now, right? Jay Billis, Jay Williams, they're everywhere. A lot of Duke players are there.
People that you don't even realize are Dukies are in your face. Seth Davis
called the game last night. Yeah, correct. Seth Davis is on CBS. So, yeah, they're everywhere. They're infiltrated everywhere, and you know, there is something about Duke. I didn't realize this. So as a kid, classic Fairweather fan deal, when I started to get into sports, I was, I don't know, 6 or 7, and the best player on Duke was Grant Hill. He was from the area that I grew up in the D.C. area, and in 1994, they made a run to the national championship. They ultimately lost to Nolan Richardson in Arkansas, but that became my team. Funny enough, they sucked the next year, Duke did, in 95. That was the, my back.
Pete Gaudette.
Yeah, Pete Gaudette came.
And then Coach K heroically petitioned the NCAA to have those games removed from his record.
Did not count. But I became a big Duke fan for the next, I don't know, 5 or 6 years. And then I got a come-to-Jesus moment, like, why do I like Duke? I'm like, I don't need to like Duke and Notre Dame. I like one hateable team. I don't need any, like, two. So I kind of...
Well, and you
myself.
Didn't have the Nats yet.
I didn't have the Nats yet.
So were you an Orioles fan, or did you...
I didn't really have a baseball team. I was a White Sox fan as a kid because I liked Frank Thomas.
And you could still get him on WGN.
WGN, I got some games. So
Put it on the board, yes!
I remember when they got Albert Bell, I was so excited. I'm like, oh my God, they're going to win. And then they were terrible.
Yeah, I don't know. There's just something about Duke. And like, I don't know if it's residual Coach K.
Are they the most hated team in sports? Is college basketball big enough?
I don't know. That's the question. Because I think you and I have talked about this. This actual collection of players was pretty likable. Like, they did not have the classic Grayson Allens, the
J.J. Redick.
Yeah, the guy, the punchable face guys.
And I don't know if you guys, did you guys talk about it yesterday? Because I will say, the Boozer Boys, kudos to you, man.
No, like, that's what I'm saying. Like, they're both like Boozers, his brother's sitting
Boozer
there.
Sitting there with, why did he have blood on his jersey?
I'm assuming Shire added that post game.
Hey, if you're going to talk to the media, let's put a little blood splotch there.
Yeah, make sure, because didn't he also reference like a swollen eye?
Well, that was Cam. Cameron Boozer
okay,
had
so,
the swollen
so,
eye.
Well, so he put makeup on Cam for the black eye and then blood on Caden for to show what a war it was.
But I mean, look, I know this is going to hurt you, but your boy, Rory McIlroy, when he blew the, was that the U.S. Open, was like, I'm out. I'm not talking to you
guys. I actually think, like, that one was whatever. Post-Masters Rory was, like, tough to be a Rory guy. He got very whiny. I guess, like, he thought, like, he was supposed to just, like, get flowers for, like, 6 months and then, you know. We turned right to the PGA, Scotty won, and it's all about Scotty again.
But I was very impressed by both the Boozers.
Totally
more
agree.
More so Caden. Caden sat there.
It's a testament to their parents.
Yeah. And Caden sat there, answered questions. And you know how it is. Reporters come in and out. So you got to answer the same question like five times.
Not only that, then you've got half the time you've got guys that were like me running around trying to coordinate phone interviews for ESPN. Like it's chaos in there.
So I give them, as a quick aside, I give them a ton of credit for taking the music, if you will. But yeah, it was, I think it was Russillo who talked about it. It's like, why is Duke losing so unifying? And you know, I do wonder, you know, in 2001 Duke overcame a massive deficit and beat Maryland in the Final Four en route to their title in 2001 with Big Boozer, Daddy Boozer, he was on that team. But yeah, to blow that game in the fashion that they did, but whew, buddy. That was, I'm sure you guys talked most extensively about it yesterday. That was one of the all-timers, man. Just an elite, elite comeback. Elite shot. Atmosphere was great. Everything. Just, you could encapsulate it. Was awesome.
Yeah. I don't really have a great answer for why Duke. I think it is simply, I think far too often we try to come up with something other than the obvious. I think it simply boils down to just exposure.
I don't think Duke is the most hated team in sports, though.
I do agree. I don't think a college basketball team can be.
I think they're hated for 1 month. Like, in the reality of the world, did people care that they were people this giddy when they blew a double-digit lead to Texas Tech in December?
No.
No. No, not at all. Like, they sort of were giddy when they blew that lead to North Carolina. Why? Because football was over.
Well,
right?
and then Shire afterwards displaying more early onset Coach K, making up the fact that like his staff got beaten up.
Yes, that is also added to Filipowski unlikable.
The Filipowski.
Ah, my leg. You got to amputate it.
Correct. And then I think the other thing that makes maybe something we've been overlooking with Shire is he has hilarious reactions when things are going horrible.
Yeah, like kind of smiled, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like the everything's, it's like the, it's the, it was like the human embodiment of the everything's fine dog cartoon. I think that's like, this team itself is not super hateable.
No. I mean, Zion wasn't hateable.
No, Zion was the closest they had, though, to flipping the script.
They were cool in 2019.
Correct. But
and
then
when they lost in the Elite Eight, they were like, oh, yeah, we prefer this.
Well, but it was the same thing. It was like Zion Cam. It was like all the overexposure. And then kind of by the end of it, it's like Zion was so much fun to watch, but like the rest of it was just gross. And I think that's the same problem. Like, if you think about it, would you say right now in the NFL, the Chiefs are probably the team that everyone loves to watch lose the most at the highest level? Because we got to set aside the Cowboys. They're just not really playing in that many games that are the highest stakes.
I think the Chiefs took the mantle from the Patriots.
Correct. And I think it all simply boils down, it's just the exposure. And it did not help that we had the Swifties coming in, and then you brought in like a whole new level, and you just felt like, just take it away.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, all of that infiltrating into the football world, people were none too pleased.
Well,
so, yeah,
it,
I think
I don't think
lose.
I'm gonna stand with my meatheads on this one.
I did laugh, though. I'll say this. I remember, was it last year? Maybe it was 2 years ago. Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce, I think we talked about it on the show. They went to a Florida Panthers game. And, like, the macho meatheads were like, why are they showing them on TV? I'm like, because it's hockey. And the biggest pop star in the world and one of the most popular NFL players are at this game. Gary Bettman's probably like, please, show them.
Correct.
Every second, and we're going to make promos that they were at this game.
Or at least the president of ESPN, or I don't know, was it at ESPN or was it Turner game?
I can't remember.
Whoever it was like, get them, you know, on the phone, get them on the screen. Here's where I'll stand up for meatheads. If you think back to when she made her debut, it was the Bears game on Fox, and it was a blowout. Everyone was fine with it then. Where the problems came is that the Swifties came into football and they showed up at our party and they wanted us to cater to them. It's like, listen, we invited you to our home. You're watching the game. It's the Super Bowl party with the sound on. That was, I think, what led to a lot of the friction.
I will say, if I remember correctly, this year they really tamped down the panning to her suite. Well, she didn't really go to road games this year. I think she just went to the home games, if I remember correctly.
It was also like the perfect storm of when it first started because she hadn't done the monster, like the monster
like
tour.
The tour,
yeah,
it wasn't the greatest thing ever. Yeah,
and it wasn't, you know, 70 of like 70 nights in, you know, in a 3 month span.
Right.
Like she was there. She was available more. Okay, so here's what I was thinking about, though, with the bigs.
Okay,
in 2018, 7 of the 8 leading scorers in the NCAA tournament were guards. 8 of the top 10 were guards. So 7 of the top 8, 8 of the top 10. In 2026, only 2 of the top 6 scorers are guards, 5 of the top 10. In 2017, only 1 of the top 10 scorers in the NCAA tournament was a front court player. So we are seeing like this move of like 20 to 30% more scoring coming from the front court. This one took me by surprise. And maybe this is the, you had to match Villanova. In the 2018 Final Four, this is 3-point attempts per game throughout the NCAA tournament. Nova first, Michigan third, Kansas second, Loyola Chicago, yeah, they were in that one, 5th. Here are the 3-point attempts per game from the Final Four participants this season. Michigan is the highest at 30. Illinois, 31st. UConn, 42nd. Arizona, 68 of 68.
Oh, okay. So that's not. I was thinking national. So that's amongst the 68.
Correct. Of the NCAA tournament teams.
Yeah, Arizona, if they win the title, is really. And I'm not going to do the thing where it's like, is Arizona changing basketball? Or did Tommy Lloyd say, I'm going to zig when everyone else is zagging
Bingo.
A little bit. And I think we could just use physicality to beat everyone. It's not to say that Arizona doesn't have dynamic guards. They do. I mean, Braden Burries is going to be a lottery pick. It's not going to be, he's not Darius Acuff.
Listen, if the draft lottery doesn't go the Grizzlies' way, Burries might be a Grizzly.
Right. And Jaden Bradley's a damn good player. But you've got these just enormous humans in their front court, and they all, I mean, the thing about Arizona, specifically Awaka and Pete, you're like, were you chiseled out of marble? Like, those dudes are gigantic.
First like, guy are, off the bus, dudes. Like, it's not just like, that they're gigantic. It's that, like, they look like, to your point, like Greek gods.
Right. If I saw Koa Pete, I'd be like, nope, I'm good. I'm not guarding that guy. No thanks. I don't want to guard you. You're, no thanks. Like, he is just like what you would envision of an edge rusher. And they got him in their front line.
No, he looks more like Myles Garrett than he does like an elite NBA guy.
Yeah. And that's what I'm curious about with the game on Saturday, and I'm sure we'll get into it as the show goes on, but it's like, Axel Lendenborg is similar. He's a big boy, like beefy. But Adai Mara, I mean, he's not a twig, but he's, I'm fascinated to see him kind of bang around with those dudes from Arizona.
Well, like, I was also thinking about, like, this. These teams that are left all have great players. Would you consider Wagler the best player on Illinois?
Define best. Like, he's the best pro prospect, clearly.
No, but I'm saying, like...
Yeah, I think so. I mean, KenPom rates Keaton Wagler as the fifth best player in college basketball this year. Like, amongst... And whatever, I mean, I'm not saying KenPom's.
But
in his player of the year rankings, in the final four, it goes Yaxel Lendenborg 3, Wagler 5, and no one else in the top 10.
Okay.
So, yeah, I think Keaton Wagler is the best player. So to your point, are you talking about just stature for Wagler?
What I would say is, isn't he really the only team of this final four that you'd say their best player is a guard?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, Terrace Reed is the best player on UConn. Yaxel Lendenborg's best player on Michigan. And I don't know.
Arizona gets difficult because they have so many.
Well, and Jaden Bradley was the Big 12 player of the year. Braden Burries is a lottery pick. Like, their backcourt's pretty damn good. So,
right, but
yeah.
I mean, KenPom would rate Koa Pete's their best player.
Yeah, KenPom has Koa Pete as their best player. Even though Jaden Bradley won player of the year. Now, Koa Pete did miss a couple Big 12 games due to injury, so maybe that's why Jaden Bradley ultimately got it. But, yeah, I mean, I think you can make an argument. I mean, there's no argument. Michigan's best player is Lendenborg, and UConn's best player is Reed. Like, big front court dudes, best players on two of the four. You can argue who's Arizona's is.
Well, then the other thing that stands out is if you go over to KenPom and you sort by average height.
Illinois is the tallest team in the country.
Every team in the Final Four is in the top 30.
Yeah.
And then if you go effective height, which kind of is taking a look at every position and not just having like outliers trying to filter out, every team's in the top 40. But this is what I think is even more interesting. If you just look at center height, Illinois, 2. Arizona, 20. Michigan, 7. And UConn, 28.
Is that nationally or amongst the...
Nationally.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So, big boys.
I mean, UConn is not... They don't have Adai Mara. They don't have the... who's the guy on Arizona? Karchenkov?
Yeah.
No. Who's the 7-2 guy? Krivas. They don't have a 7-2 guy, but, I mean, their size everywhere. I mean... Caravan 6'8", Mullen 6'6", Reed 6'11". They don't have anyone under 6'4 in their starting lineup.
And what I think is interesting is, because to your point, will they break basketball? Well, Nova felt like they broke basketball for a little bit. I think the problem is, like, for instance, do I think the NBA all of a sudden is going to start pivoting? They're going to see all these bigs in college and they're going to start pivoting and guys are going to start doing it? No, because I still think the quality of shooter in the NBA is at such an elite level that three is more than two is always going to apply. But where I do think it could be more of a trend in college is there are so few elite shooters that just because three is more than two, well, you're going to give up a lot of misses. And what we've been seeing in the NBA, or what we've been seeing in the NCAA tournament, is when you miss these long threes, like, it is just points in transition. And that's how you just get these flood runs. Like, I think about Tennessee on Sunday when they fell in, you know, they start falling behind a little bit. All right, let's get the shots up. And then it was just, you blinked and they were down 30.
I look at the matchup that we have in the nightcap with Michigan and Arizona, and I have no idea from a betting standpoint what to do, because I'm like, if this game was a blowout one way or the other, I would be floored. And maybe that's wishful thinking.
I think this would be the other thing. It's, if this game were a blowout one way or the other, which side would you even lean?
I guess I would say Michigan.
I think I would lean Michigan solely because when Arizona, like, to me, like, the Arizona domination game against a quality opponent was Purdue, where, what did the final end up? Like 12, 13?
It wasn't six. I know that. 79-64. They outscored them in the second half by 23.
And to me, like, that is their blowout, where they just suffocate you. You know that you're dead. Like, did it not feel like, because I think I bet Purdue too. When Purdue got down like four, I thought it was over.
Oh yeah, it was on. It was done.
And like when they get up 10, they suffocate you. But it does feel like Michigan has the ability to have the cluster scoring run because they are a little bit better from three.
Yeah, they're a very good 3-point shooting team. They don't shoot a ton of them, but
they're effective.
Good, yeah, they're a 37% 3-point shooting team, which is top 30 in the country. But I think to your point, we've seen when Michigan is on, it can get ugly. When they came to Vegas, they won by 40, 30, and 40. Granted, the teams they beat ended up not being as good as maybe we thought they were at the time. San Diego State and Auburn didn't make the NCAA tournament. Gonzaga was...
Well, Auburn beat three champions.
They beat Florida. You know, they beat Florida on the road. Hey, still alive in the NIT.
The more you know.
War damn Eagle.
We got the dueling Indianapolis. We got NIT and... Final
Can
four.
I tell you that I think that's awesome?
I think
if you're a hoops nerd, you could go to Indianapolis this weekend. You go to Hinkle Fieldhouse on Thursday and watch decent hoop. And then you've got the Final Four on Saturday. You've got the Division III, Division II, and the NIT Championship at the Pacers Arena on Sunday. And then the National Championship on Monday. I kind of like it.
Okay, I didn't realize we had D2, D3 there. I'll grant you that. If it's just an NIT, like, okay, I don't care.
Yeah, no, I hear you on that. But, I mean, I think we're going to see more of this where the NCAA is just going to say, why are we spreading it out? Let's save money. Let's just put it all in one city. All these cities are going to have multiple arenas. We're not going to put them in Luke. Like, if they come to Vegas, I mean, we have a billion arenas, and they're coming to Vegas in, I think, 2 years. Getting the Final Four. We're getting everything, baby. It's all coming to Vegas. Getting another Super Bowl. Getting an NBA team. Baseball team.
And some of those y'all are excited about.
We got the Frozen Four. How about that?
I did see Frozen Four, right, baby?
North Dakota, come on down to Vegas, baby.
Well, haven't we gotten to the point where there's like only... I feel like now with the stadium thing, like it feels like we go to like the same four places. I at least am excited to see something new.
I do like, have a story quickly for Saturday. So you and I were texting back and forth about how to bet the Elite Eight, and I really liked Purdue. I was like, I think Purdue can hang. So I have a buddy back east that I...
We were right for a half.
Yeah. I have a buddy back east that I bet with, share insights on, tell him, don't do that. That's really dumb. So we bet Purdue, and I'm out to dinner. And, you know, I'm being a great, great husband as I have my phone in my lap at a very expensive dinner. And I'm like, all right, 38, 31. I'll take it. Catching six. And I get a text message from the buddy back east. I think Purdue might win it all. And I'm like, what? I mean, do you, have I not taught you anything
about gambling?
Like, for the love of God, man. And I just responded, easy mush. Let's get this thing home. And then my next text message was to him, Arizona's on a 20-7 run. And it was toast. So
our syndicate had the different. Our syndicate at the half was like, we should go bet Arizona.
Yeah, that was smart. I wasn't really fully engaged on the game. If I had been, I probably... So I was on Sunday, I bet the under in Duke-UConn, which was dead about 3 minutes into that game. But I'm like, eventually this thing's going to slow down. So I was able to get some under 148.5 at like the under 12 media timeout, but... Yeah, the Arizona second half bet was probably the way to go to get off of your position and easy winner there.
So we go to Detroit next year,
mm-hmm.
Vegas in 28, back to Indy in 29, Jerry's World getting involved in 2030, and then Atlanta, the new Mercedes-Benz in 2031. At least we're getting some new spots, like... We don't have Houston in there. There's no San Antonio. Like, I feel like we're always just going to have Indy there.
When was
I get
the last
it.
Last time we were in Detroit?
I know that North Carolina won it there one time.
Okay.
But I want to say that's like 09. I can't remember if they've been there since.
I've never been to a Final Four. I've heard the weekend is really fun. And I really, I would like to, we need to figure out, we'll get some sponsors. We'll take the show on the road in the next coming years. Because I've heard the Final Four Saturday. I think it's kind of like the Super Bowl. Like you go for Saturday and then you leave on Sunday.
It's definitely a convention thing. So the last time they had it there was 09.
Okay. So it's been a minute. 18 years come next year.
I'm trying to think. They had the... regional semis that was before. Yeah, so it has been a while. So Detroit trying to get back into the game. All right, we will take a look at more of the Final Four during hour number two, but let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's talk some Grizzlies. Eric Hasselstein, Memphis Grizzlies Radio Network play-by-play announcer, joins the program next. Stick around, you're listening to Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. That music means we welcome the Memphis Grizzlies Radio Network play-by-play announcer, Eric Hasselstein, to the program. Eric, when's the last time you've been home for, like, this long of a period of time? Like, this will be, like, what, a six-game homestand?
I don't recall a six-game homestand during the season in recent years. So, I don't know. That's a great question. But the off-season?
Yeah, exactly. I guess that
training camp? I don't know. Yeah, it's been well. It helps you, like you wake up some days and obviously you go to dad mode and family mode, but when he's at his mom's, that's when the other day I woke up and he was at his mom's house and I was like, I got like a whole day. I found myself like with an enormous amount of time. I was like, huh, okay, so this is what it's like.
You didn't dust off the clubs? Was it a cold day?
I think so. I've been hitting I usually, right now, until like it kind of warms up a little bit, because I'm kind of soft when it comes to playing and it's cold or windy, I just hit that simulator, and I enjoy that a lot. So I can get done. They play 36 in 2 hours, and I'm good.
All right,
putting off.
Well, definitely. I mean, it's the beauty of TGL. You know, look out TGL. Here comes. I hear there's an opening on Jupiter Links, so you might get called up.
Right. I don't know. Maybe it's a curse of that. I might be running into some car issues there. I don't know if I want to.
Yeah.
Step in there, man. What a crazy deal. I was actually, ironically, I was at the simulator when we got the word of that. The guy I was playing with.
Yeah. So. It's one of those ones where I love how we act surprised, but it's like every time Tiger's been on a screen in an interview, I'm like, man, this doesn't look good.
Yeah, he's, well, he took a long time to get back to that too, right?
Yeah.
He wasn't even, he made his debut and they lost. And then, I don't know, man, I can't imagine, like, I'm not going to feel sorry for the guy because obviously he has reaped the benefits of it, but I can't imagine what it goes through, you know, what he has to go through on a day-to-day basis in terms of, basically seeing, you know, his whole life in print or whatever he does and you know, everything that comes with being that famous. And, you know, look, some of it's his own doing, some of it's, you know, like it's, we live in a society where if you're that kind of star, like it's hard to have any time alone. And I heard the guys this morning talking about get a driver. And he's like, well, I just value my privacy. And I get that, but I would want a driver too, because even if you black out your windows, if someone figures out you're in that car, you know, that's not exactly a great situation either. I know a lot of professional athletes now have drivers, and that way no one knows, you know, like you're in the car and no one can pull over, honk, harass, do whatever, you know, I don't know.
No, where I'm
the amount of pressure I imagine is can get to people. And even a guy that, you know, had the nerves he had to play in the high pressure situations he did, you know, sometimes that can change too, you know?
Well, where I'm sympathetic to his plight is there's not really any other sports figure where the entire sport, the entire industry, everything from equipment manufacturers to apparel, like everyone just wants a piece of him because he still brings eyeballs.
He's a gold mine.
You know what I mean?
He's
like
a gold mine.
And even LeBron is not at this level in terms of the entire like ecosystem of the sport. And like, I do get where that, like, hey, we want to start a simulator league. Let's get Tiger. Hey, we need to entirely revamp the entire PGA Tour and the schedule and whatnot. Tiger, you're in charge of it. Like everything that's like involved in the sport that needs eyeballs, like they have to bring him in.
Absolutely. I mean, look, here's the thing with golf, and I rarely ran into someone who goes, oh man, I hate Tiger Woods. Because why would you? Why would you hate Tiger Woods? Like, what is there to hate about it? You know, I don't like his caddy. I don't like this. But for the most part, most people love Tiger Woods. He drives the ratings up. He drives everything up, right? So, but you talk about NBA players. There are people that can't stand LeBron. There are people that can't stand Steph Curry or the Golden State Warriors, which
yep.
I get. But also, to me, as a guy who watched that Warriors team struggle for 20 years – and make it in 20 years to the playoffs one time and not watch them. Like, I mean, I grew up a season ticket holder, but I saw some terrible basketball. And yeah, they did, after they got good, go get Kevin Durant because that was just the luck of that year where everybody got the TV money and a Brinks truck backed up to the owner's front doorstep. And Kevin Durant said, you know what? I wouldn't mind putting a couple pieces of jewelry on my finger. Let's go play with them. And they got along. And I wasn't upset about it, but people were. But it always blew my mind that people would hate Steph Curry or hate the Warriors for whatever reason, or everybody. I mean, every NBA
player. Well, Draymond made it easy.
Yeah, Draymond made it easier, no doubt. But there are detractors for everybody there. And you think about football teams, obviously. You were talking about the Chiefs. You guys were talking about the Patriots, you know, the Cowboys for sure. Aaron Rodgers. Take a pick. When it comes to golf, if you're a golf fan, you see that guy dominate like that. It's really hard to hate him because you're like, it's amazing what he's doing. and the consistency he did it with. It's, you know, next level, like superstardom. I don't think guys, golfers get that hatred. You get it if you're a guy like Patrick Reed, who people have said is a colossal jerk and, you know, got caught cheating and things like that.
Tiger stealing never did that. From his teammates in college.
Yeah, things like that. You know, things that make you a bad guy. But you don't get that in the individual sports. People hated tennis players because of how they treated umpires. Like growing up as a kid, I didn't root for John McEnroe because I thought he was an a-hole. I get older and I watch him and I'm like, I get it. He was just the fieriest competitor out there. So now I watch the documentaries and I'm like, God, like McEnroe was unbelievable the way he thought the game. I don't know that he could do it today because he didn't have that same kind of power, but that can be equipment and things like that. I mean, you can talk about old golfers. Could they compete today with the equipment, you know, or the way they used to hit the ball? Well, you got to take into account the equipment, the way the things were designed, and athletes get bigger, faster, stronger. So I just have rarely heard anybody say, I hate Tiger Woods.
No, the only people that, like, quote unquote, hate him, it's like, well, if you were like a Phil fan and he just stole your joy. It was the same thing with the Patriots. It's like, if you rooted for an AFC team and you thought you were good, it's just like the Patriots stole your joy. How the Bills fans feel about Mahomes right now.
That's a good point right there. I do get that. But I think in team sports, it's a lot easier because you're rooting for, like, common goals. Like,
yep.
People hate the Yankees because they were always there. Like, when it's an individual and you're seeing guys basically competing with themselves and there's nothing that can stop them, you're like, oh, my gosh, that's unbelievable. So, yeah.
Have you found yourself thanking the NBA for cleaning up the last 2 minutes as you watch the NCAA tournament and they can't literally have a ball go out of bounds without checking the clock?
Yeah, I do think that there's ways to do it. I think if you're going to have a game of those magnitude, of that magnitude, and you want to make sure, then you better have the guys in back in the review room.
Yeah, just have the
right away.
Have the command center.
They can just wire it right over. Yeah, you shouldn't be stopping the game the way it is. Yeah, it gets tiresome. But, you know, we'll live and we'll learn. I mean, it's just I think obviously this time of year, you know, college basketball takes a big stage. I'm blown away that we're playing on national championship night. And it's not just us, there's five games. But, you know, they're two different types of games. I mean, the game is just different. And I understand why people are fans of college basketball and love it. I love it. But I also understand why people that are fans of the NBA, they go, I can't watch this. I can't watch what's happening here. And I said, you can't just settle in on, oh, the NBA is just better. They're just better players. They're just this. They're just that. You can't go to that, to me. Like, you have to accept it for what it is. Like, I enjoy Major League Baseball, you know, as you know, as much as anybody. I love college baseball. They're two totally different games. It's just different. It's just watching the game. I'm going to go to a high school baseball game tonight. That's not a major league game. And people are like, why would you go to a high school game? Because I like watching the competition. So if you take it for what it is, you can't compare college to pro, even in college football, which is probably the one sport it's the closest where it resembles it the most. But if you break it down, does it? I mean, like, does it? You see quarterbacks that can't hardly throw it 30 yards. And in the NFL, you'll say, well, there's guys like that too. There's really not. There's just faster defenders. So,
no, I mean, how many times do you watch an NFL game and just see a receiver open by 40 yards?
When Peyton Manning took over with the Colts, it happened pretty regularly with Marvin Harrison and then Reggie Wayne, which when that happened, I'll never forget watching that and going like, how are these guys getting this open? This is absurd. Like, there was two or three plays a game where Marvin Harrison was covered by the 20-yard line, and that was it. There wasn't a defender in sight. I'm like, what are they just like knocking these guys out or something? It was bananas, the stuff they came up with. But yeah, you're right. You don't have that just, all right, I'm just going to out-athlete you and out, you know, run you type thing.
Well, it's just like you watch a college football game, and it's like every fourth series, there's somebody open by 35 yards out of the picture. And then, and that's what we were talking about with the NBA, because obviously with college, the lack of shot making has caused a lot of these elite programs to be like, do we just have to take 43s for the sake of taking 43s, or should we maybe, you know, feed it into the post and have our big that's just dominant, like, slam it home. And then you think about, like, well, is there a chance to zig when they zag in the NBA? And I still think the answer is probably not, just because the average NBA shooter, like, is just so elite. And it does, as much as I miss having Styles make fights in the NBA, like, I do understand why everybody's playing a similar style of basketball.
Yeah, I heard you and Tim talking about it, and I agree with you. I think if you why am I blanking on the Arizona coach right now? That
Tommy Lloyd.
Yeah, from Gonzaga, Tommy Lloyd. I think if you realize that's what you have, and that's the players that you have, and you have a system, you try to go get players that fit your system. Well, in today's day in college basketball, if you can't get that and you get the best players, then you got to kind of tweak your system to fit what you have. And, you know, go back to the days of Loyola Marymount and, you know, the Paul Westhead.
We don't talk about LMU on this program.
Yeah, I know you're a Pepperdine guy, but back in those days, you
PCH
know, like,
Cup, it's real.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was, I was out there at that time, and I actually saw Loyola in the NCAA tournament. The Sweet 16 and Elite Eight were in Oakland that year, and UNLV was there, and they were dominant, and it was Alabama, and it was Ball State, and that was the Hank Gathers year. And we all heard about Hank Gathers, and we knew about Bo Kimble. But when it came to talking about them as NBA guys, like, I thought Hank Gathers had the better chance because of his size. Bo Kimble, you're like, well, he's scoring 38 a game. I'm like, yeah, he's shooting twice as much as every other player, right, too. So, like, knock that down just a peg. He's not 38 a game on, you know, 20 shots, and he's knocking everything down, and he just can't be stopped. He's, you know, Glenn Rice was like that when he was at Michigan. But they played to a style, and they made the players adapt. Now with NIL, I think you got guys that are picking and choosing where they want to go by money, not necessarily by coach. It's partially by coach, but who's got the biggest check? Who's making me the best offer? I may not fit Tommy Lloyd's style if I'm a player, but if Arizona says, hey, we really want you and we can work with you, we feel like you're a perfect fit, you're like, all right, I'll take your $4 million, whatever it may be, or however much these guys are getting, which I think hopefully, in my opinion, this comes to a head and we say, okay, this is how much you can spend. Don't care how much, you know, you can raise, don't care what you're at, but for the sake of sports, like, this just can't turn into the wild, wild west the way it's becoming to me. But whether that happens or not, we'll see. But I think, yeah, like, you've got to figure out now where if you don't have elite shot making, do you just continue to chuck up threes to chuck up threes? I will say it feels like guys are coming into the NBA when I see rookies and their range, they know what the NBA game is about. They've figured it out. Like, it used to be where guys would come in and that 2 or 3 feet of difference on that 3-point shot made a lot of difference. Guys that were really good college shooters came in and they struggled in the NBA. And that still happens a little bit, but I think that more so happens because of the speed of the game and the physicality of the game more than the length of the shot. I mean, we're seeing college kids just launch NBA threes like it's nothing.
I mean, and the game winner, the shot of the weekend was from freaking 35 feet.
Yeah. I mean, look, I'm also chuckling because we're so overreactionary and now Duke fans are like, oh, we got to get rid of John Shire. Like, why? If that pass gets through, you're in the Final Four and you're going, okay, cool, he got us back to the promised land. I get it. It's we're passionate and we're creatures in the moment, but and for all the things, again, not going to feel sorry for him because he's lived a blessed life and he's going to play professional basketball. But for all the things that Caden Boozer has probably had to deal with his brother being, you know, one of the top three picks, you know, possibly the top pick, and all the hype and everything, he's kind of just this forgotten guy. And I'm like, I'm watching him play. I'm like, kid's pretty damn good. And he just had a moment. He just had a moment at the wrong time. And the backlash that will come with that because of how this is the way society is now and social media and things like that, you kind of go, man, I hate that for you. I mean, I know you're going to be okay, but I hate that for you. And so, again, I go back to all this stuff, and I'm like, the game itself, I think the players are more skilled, and I think if you have a guy like a Cam Boozer, man, you give it to him in the high post, and you let him square up, or you give it to him at the 17-foot spot on the wing or at the nail on the foul line and let him go to work and let him create – you don't make that kid go out and go, well, in the NBA, you're going to have to be able to shoot three, so let's go shoot 30 of them, you know, every two games, every weekend, or whatever we do, and see how it works. Let him play to his strengths and worry about what's going to happen at the next level with what they do when the season's over. These kids train differently. They have models now, and we've seen about these workouts, and we have social media access and stuff put online where you can follow exactly, you know, what these guys' workouts were. It used to be like you'd hear of legendary workouts like Jerry Rice and what he did. Now it would be like published everywhere. Well, this is what he did, and some guy would go do it and say, all right, here's the map of doing it. Give me $20 a month, and I'll keep mapping out, you know, more workout plans for you. I'm sure your Instagram or whatever gets flooded with it all the time too. You know, military workouts, Tai Chi workouts. Everybody's got something for somebody. And, you know, I think sometimes as parents of kids that are playing, we go, oh yeah, we got to do this. Oh yeah, we got to do that. And then we end up overloading them. Like train to what you want to work on, work with a purpose, things like that. But there's so much more development in terms of training and mental aspect of how you approach things. I think now, like, college coaches are like, I don't have to worry about training this guy for the next level. He's got enough money here, and he's probably going to stay longer. And if I think his strength is here, let's play to that. And if he wants to go somewhere else, he will, and I'll replace him. I mean, it's just different than, all right, I signed this guy to a scholarship. He looked like, you know, Tarzan in college or in high school, and he gets to college and he wants to play like Jane. That's, you know, no offense. Everybody flooded in.
Look like Tarzan, play like Jane.
Yeah, you know, like it's an old saying. It's not meant to disparage the women's game or anything, but, you know, you look like just a beast, and then you get into bigger competition and you can't compete. And we've seen that. I mean, I remember reading about quarterbacks like Dan Kendra that went to Florida State, and he was this unbelievable high school quarterback, and the next Joe Montana, and he had a pet alligator, and he got to Florida State and he stunk. He was terrible. And you're like, oh my gosh, this guy was like thought to be, you know, if he comes out after 1 year of college, he could be the number one player drafted. They moved him to like linebacker. So you just never know. And now I think with this NIL stuff, you know, you can go, hey, look, your contract's up and we're going to lower it. So if you want to get the same money, you want to go somewhere else, be my guest, but you ain't working. Or on the note of the smaller schools, you're running into, oh my gosh, this kid's developed into a stud. He's not staying. No matter what, he's not staying. And I think that's sometimes better for the kid. I mean, look at Cedric Coward.
Yeah.
He started Division III, goes to Eastern Washington, ends up at Washington State, is going to go to Duke, says, I'll go to the Combine, and he gets through. He would have been on that Duke team.
I mean,
on that Duke
team. I think if he's on that Duke team, I don't think we're talking about the shot that Mullins hit.
I think we're talking about arguably one of the greatest college basketball teams ever.
Now, would that have kept them from getting another player? Like, I don't know, but like, I think this is all to like your point. I think it's all kind of trickled down. Like in the NBA, it doesn't mean that if you're a back to the basket big and a traditional center that there's not a home for you. Like there are examples of it, but it is not as valued as, you know, perimeter scorers. And